You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
What we're dealing with here is a total lack of respect for the law.
You're listening to Done by Law, brought to you by the Federation of Community Legal Centres.
Welcome, dear listeners. It is Jimmy here on Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, and welcome to those listening on various podcast platforms or via streaming on 3cr.org.au. It is me, Jimmy, along with Bonnie in the studio tonight. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Jimmy. How are you tonight?
Very good. Very excited for tonight's show. It is, of course, just after 6 p.m. on Tuesday, the 3rd of March, 2026. As always, we like to begin our show by acknowledging the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation as the original and rightful custodians of the land that 3CR broadcasts from. We also acknowledge the custodians from where our guest is dialing in from tonight, the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. We pay our deepest respects to elders, past and present, and acknowledge that these lands are stolen, never ceded. This is always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Now, Jimmy, did you know that employers are increasingly using AI to surveil their workers?
Well, I think workers are using it too, but I did not realise that our bosses were watching us.
I know, it's pretty scary. So we thought tonight it was a good chance to welcome Sarah Sasha onto the show to help unpack this and help our listeners understand, I guess, the state of what's really happening with AI surveillance in the workplace. Now, Sarah is a senior responsible technology policy specialist working at the Human Technology Institute, which is based out of the University of Sydney. So this institute is an independent, not-for-profit, interdisciplinary organisation that works to apply human values to new and emerging technology, including AI. Sarah works in the policy team, which works on influencing technology policy and law reform through a human rights lens, particularly looking at AI regulation. So tonight we've got Sarah on the show to talk about surveillance in the workplace and how the law ought to respond to the use of technology-enabled surveillance tools, including AI, to monitor employees. It's great timing as well, Jimmy, because just yesterday, on Monday, the 2nd of March, the Human Technology Institute released a snapshot report on this topic. The report, called Surveillance Creep, I quite like that name for this, looks at the current state of worker surveillance in Australia and how the gaps and uncertainties in our current laws are failing both workers and employers. The report calls for reform to ensure that human rights of workers are better protected. So welcome, Sarah.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for joining us, Sarah. Fantastic intro, Bonnie. I am already watering at the mouth to find out what horrible things our bosses are getting up to. But first and foremost, I'm interested to hear from you, Sarah, about the Human Technology Institute. Can you tell us more about it and what kinds of projects are you working on?
Yeah, sure. So the Human Technology Institute, as you mentioned, we're based at UTS, but we're not an academic centre. We're very impact-focused, and we are focused on ensuring that new technologies are safe, fair and inclusive, and that our laws protect us from harms associated with technology. So we actually have quite an interdisciplinary setup. My team is the policy team, as you mentioned, so we're a bunch of lawyers, mostly with human rights backgrounds, and we're working on the law reform side of things. We also work with regulators and civil society, so we work with them around capabilities and helping enforce existing laws that apply to AI as well as other technologies. We also have a corporate governance team that works with companies and directors and provides trainings on like AI adoption and governance in that respect. And then we also have a team of data science that work on technical AI applications that benefit our society. So we're across the board.
Wow. I mean, I feel a little bit more reassured that you guys exist and are doing this work. It's just so important. So I guess now turning to this report, Surveillance Creep, as we said, was released just yesterday. I want to start with a really basic question. So this report uses the term technology-enabled surveillance tools. It'd be really helpful, Sarah, to break this down. What does this mean? And if you could give us some examples.
Yeah, of course. So we use the term technology-enabled surveillance to refer to any kind of monitoring of workers through technology for the purposes of managing and influencing their behaviour and for making workplace decisions. And many of these tools are AI-powered, but we're including other kinds of technologies in that definition. And what these what distinguishes them is that they involve the collection and use of lots of data about workers, so data about their communications, their location, their attitudes, behaviour, emotions, stress level, the list goes on. So we're capturing a range of technologies within this definition, although I will maybe provide a caveat, which is some forms of monitoring are acceptable and we expect it in the workplace, but not all monitoring is reasonable. So the focus of our report is really on the sort of unreasonable surveillance that causes harm. And what a lot of these sort of new forms of AI technologies do is introduce new kinds of harms or exacerbate harms, particularly because they can be very intrusive. So I can give a couple of examples that we profiled in the report. And there's many where this comes from, so please stop me if I'm talking too much. So one example is monitoring software that's on device. So, for example, if you're a remote worker and you have a work-issued laptop, there's software available that can monitor virtually everything you do on the device, so live screen recording, keyboard tracking, audio recording, and send updates to managers as well, like if you're not at your desk. And there was an example recently in Victoria, a company called SafeTrack was found to have used software like this to covertly audio record workers for up to 8 hours a day. That's one kind of tool. Another kind is productivity tools that you see used in warehouse contexts and in supermarkets like Amazon and Woolies. And these tools track your productivity against like set metrics. So it might track how quickly you take to pick and move items in a warehouse, for example, and then you might be penalised if you fail to meet these productivity metrics that are assigned to you. And I might give one more example. Another sort of emerging form of tech surveillance is emotion recognition tools. So what these do is they claim to be able to assess tone and emotion in your voice, in your text that you write in emails, through analysing facial expressions. They can be very intrusive. They're also kind of based on pseudoscience. And it's a little worrying that those kinds of tools are being used as a basis for decision making.
That is terrifying.
It's so worrying. Yeah.
And where's the right gone to have a bad day at work and still be productive? That's what I want to know. Sarah, we're going to get stuck into all of this, but how did you guys come to research all this? Can you talk us through the background to the report and any methodologies used, and most importantly, how much AI was used in this research?
No AI was used in this research, so I'll just put that out there. So this is an issue that's been on our radar for a little while. I think we've sort of reached a point where there's a need for urgent action in this space. There's basically been two sort of related trends that have happened. One is that there's been this really rapid development in the technology itself. The other is like post-pandemic, we've had this move towards more people working from home and the gig economy, and that's pushed demand for these types of tools and uptake. So we have a sort of vortex where we now have more intrusive tools, more widespread use, and it's also creeping into our personal home lives. So we just see this as a really important issue that needs to be addressed. So that's why we decided to do this report. As to the methodology, this is a snapshot report. So by that, it sets out the problem and it sets out an initial reform solution, but we are going to test it further. So we'll do more detailed consultations with unions, with industry, with legal experts, with government, and we'll build consensus around the reform solution and develop it a bit further. We did talk to a lot of different union reps and others and industry reps when we were developing the snapshot report, but there is a more sort of detailed consultation process to happen now that it's out.
So great. And it's so important, I guess, that work of engaging so many stakeholders to really understand the prevalence and use and impact of workers, which I'd really like to, I guess, understand a bit more in terms of what you've found already. In terms of that impact, looking at the use of these tools in Australia, and what those impacts are for Australian workers, I wonder, Sarah, how is technology-enabled surveillance impacting workers in light of this report?
Yeah, it's impacting workers in a lot of different ways. I think there are a few themes that came out really strongly in our report. So I'll mention a couple. The first is that point that I mentioned earlier, that we have this surveillance creep into our personal and home lives, and there's a real blurring of the boundaries that's happening. So it's a real sort of privacy issue when, for example, if you're being surveilled in your home and you're being recorded on your laptop, that's also picking up, you know, any conversations you're having around your laptop. It's picking up conversations you're having with your children and their data, for example. Also, if you're being sort of, if your social media is being monitored or your location's being scrutinized outside of work hours, that's really extending the scope by which employers can you know, use things against you, like private information that has nothing to do with your job. Mm-hmm. So it really leaves people with a limited ability to switch off from work and have a space that's free from surveillance. That's one, like, really big impact. Another is that, just in a really simple sense, it's a lot harder for people to do their job properly and well. So if you're, like, constantly being watched and you're being micromanaged, this is going to stress you out. It affects your performance. Research that we looked at for this report shows that, like, simply being subject to emotion recognition technology without anything else increases your stress level. Mm-hmm. So it just, you know, does that. And workers, like, in the sort of physical sense, are being pushed to work harder and faster to meet these productivity metrics. They're not getting any additional reward for that, and they're also potentially putting themselves in danger of injury or workplace accidents, because obviously if you don't have time to take a break or to think about something before you do it, it creates these worker health and safety risks. So I might stop there, but those are two big ones.
Yeah, wow. I'm interested to know what you guys have found out about how much awareness this is. Obviously, that's a big aim of the report, but I've just started a new job in the last six months, and they've got all these fancy technologies, and they've given me a computer to take home, which I was very grateful for, and now I'm quite petrified about what they're seeing or doing or listening to in my home time. I read all the policies. I'm not really clear on it, but I understand that the, you know, report, I understand that there was new polling data on worker attitudes and concerns. And considering what you're talking about, do workers know they are being surveilled to this extent?
I think the short answer is not no. You mentioned, like, policies and contracts and that kind of thing. That's usually how that's under, like, the way that our laws work. That's how you sort of legitimise the use of monitoring in your workplace, is if you gain consent. But in reality, having some generic and vague clause in your contract saying that you might be monitored doesn't really tell you anything about how you might be monitored, how your data is being used, how you might continue to be monitored after you've signed the contract over the course of your job. So there's really not a lot of insight that or control that workers have when they sign up to these kinds of consent processes. And in terms of the polling that we did, there is, I should say that the Minderoo Foundation commissioned and Talbot Mills did. It does point to an awareness gap, although it's hard to... we only really have polling data to go on in this regard. But what's really interesting is comparing previous polling that was done with employers with what employees think is happening. So a few years ago, there was polling done by Herbert Smith Freehills Kramer, which found that 91% of Australian employers monitored their remote workers' locations. And there was another survey in 2020 by Capterra, which found that 59% of employers use software tools as well to monitor their workers. The Minderoo polling found that 42% of workers are aware of various forms of worker surveillance and they think it's happening, but only 9% thought it was happening in their own workplace.
Wow.
So that's quite a gap.
Huge gap. Yeah.
So I don't think workers really have an understanding of the true extent of surveillance.
Yeah. Wow. We're racing along through this show because you're engrossing us, so we don't want to interrupt you, but we are going to interrupt the program just for about 60 seconds. We'll come back in the second half of the program to talk more about this surveillance creep report recently published by the Human Technology Institute. Halftime here at Done by Law. Stay tuned and we'll take a break with a quick community service announcement.
Do you have a fine you're worried about? If you are struggling to pay a fine, there can be ways to help you deal with it. You may be able to get your fine lifted or reduced where you are experiencing difficult life circumstances, such as family violence, mental health challenges, disability, homelessness, or drug or alcohol dependency. If you have fines from not paying toll roads, you may also be able to get the fine waived if you're experiencing financial or other hardship. Speak to a community lawyer or financial counsellor to get advice on your options. You can find your local community centre on the Federation of Community Legal Centres website, fclc.org.au. You can find a financial counsellor by calling the National Debt Helpline on 1800 007 007. The Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned to hear the rest of your 3CR podcast.
Welcome back to Done by Law on 3CR Community Radio with Jimmy and Bonnie. We're speaking with Sarah Sacher, discussing the use of technology-enabled surveillance tools in the workplace, which sounds quite bland and not at all terrifying until you listen to the first half of the program and what's to follow. Welcome back, Sarah.
Thank you.
So what's the point of all of these technologies? We talked about the kind of really intensive and multifaceted way of monitoring the human condition in the workplace. Why are employers using these tools and do they actually work to achieve employers' goals? You talked about pseudoscience, you talked about performance tracking in warehouses, but does this stuff work?
That's something we looked into. So, I mean, employers use these tools for a range of reasons. Some are, to me, are more legitimate than others. So some use it to monitor work health and safety in the workplace or, you know, to protect company property. Others use it for more sort of general management and observation and productivity tracking. And productivity is really a big one that that drives the uptake of these kinds of tools. But there is a sort of flip side to adopting intrusive surveillance tools. And I think employers should really think carefully about what their goal is when they adopt these tools and if these tools will actually help achieve them, particularly around productivity. What a lot of research shows is that excessive surveillance undermines trust in the workplace. That in turn undermines productivity, retention. It can also perversely lead to higher rates of rule breaking and resistance, which is interesting. And another thing with these productivity tools is that they don't necessarily measure what they say they measure. So productivity tools are about quantitative metrics, so they don't look at quality and they don't really look at real working conditions or like individual differences between workers. So, you know, if a tool is tracking the amount of bathroom breaks your worker takes, that's not saying anything about the quality of their work. So is it actually helping? Probably in many cases, if you're using these overly intrusive tools, probably it's having sort of counterproductive impacts as well.
Yeah, there seems to be this real, I guess, disconnect between, I guess, understandings of productivity in the workplace and that it's, you know, not just hours in front of a screen, but also quality of output. And I guess you raise really, interesting questions around that line between what is acceptable when it comes to monitoring productivity in the workplace versus what goes too far and becomes this harmful and intrusive surveillance of workers. So I guess, you know, as a lawyer, I'm really interested to know how currently do our laws in Australia respond to the use of these surveillance tools and whether that's consistent across states as well. And also, what do you see as the key gaps?
Yeah, sure. So our laws are not fit for purpose in this space. So we have a patchwork of laws across a few different legal frameworks and state and territory and federal jurisdictions that are very complex, they're confusing, and there are a lot of gaps. So they cut across the Federal Privacy Act, but also state surveillance laws, and then work health and safety laws and the Fair Work Act are also in the mix and relevant in some instances where these tools are used for decision making. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, like one of the fundamental issues with the way that our law is that it's consent-based, essentially. And I think we can all sort of recognise that consent in the employment context isn't really fair, because when you're a worker, there's this big power imbalance between you and your employer, and you can't really give free and informed consent if it's going to risk your employment. So that's a pretty big problem with how our laws currently work. So that's bad for workers because they don't have protections really, or you know, sort of basic protections. It's also not great for employers either, because they just don't really have certainty about what they need to do to comply with the law, even if they're well intentioned, and they have to think of, you know, if they're a company that operates across multiple jurisdictions, their obligations might be inconsistent. So it's in everybody's interest to reform the law.
Yeah, definitely. Because how can you follow a law that you don't know and you don't understand? It's like the key kind of component of what makes a law legitimate as well is how certain it is. So I guess then, you know, I'm interested to know what the government is really doing about this. And I understand that there has been a national AI action plan released by the Australian government. And I guess given what we've spoken about tonight, you'd really hope that surveillance is a key part of this report. So, Sarah, how do you think that this Australia AI Action Plan properly incorporates and responds to these developments in workplace surveillance?
Yeah, so I think the National AI Action Plan is a really good first step. It sets an agenda and it provides a vision for a range of different AI-related issues, and in the plan is a recognition of surveillance as a concern. There's also recognition of the need to improve privacy laws and work health and safety laws. It's quite a high level. It's at a high level, though. So what really we want to see now is a move from commitment to action and some real concrete reforms. And I think our reform solution that we're proposing would be a means of implementing the goals in that plan and making it effective. So whether or not it's effective or not is really dependent on the action, I would say.
Yeah, well, it's good that we've got, you know, at least people are panicking. I don't know if you know, the action is being... Yeah, you are, we are, and there's, you know, a plan in quotation marks in place. But look, it's good to know that there are people out there worried about this, because I think a lot of us are a bit asleep otherwise. We've only got a few minutes left in the program, so I do want to give you some time to talk about the reform proposed by the report, and and whether we're looking to any examples overseas for this, including whether other countries might be doing this better, and what reform this report is hoping to advocate for, and how this will better protect the rights of workers.
Yeah, so in terms of what other countries are, which countries are doing it better, I'd say that generally the gold standard for privacy-related stuff is the EU and the UK, which adopts the GDPR, which is a privacy sort of generally applying privacy law. So we did draw on that a little bit when we were considering our own reform proposal, because one of the things that the GDPR does is that it includes requirements beyond consent. When dealing with handling of personal information across the board, not just with workers. But in terms of our own solution, the Australian government has already committed to update the Federal Privacy Act to require organisations to handle personal information fairly and reasonably, and that's that criteria does reflect some of those GDPR criteria too. And they're really flexible criteria that can apply to a range of contexts. And the best bit for me as a human rights lawyer is that they draw in really useful human rights criteria like consideration of purpose, of necessity and proportionality around activities that impact on privacy. So our own reform proposal is that we are proposing that Australian law spell out what is fair and reasonable in the specific context of worker monitoring. And ideally we have a consistent or harmonised approach that would link with the Privacy Act federally and apply throughout Australia. So that would require some amendments to various laws, and it's something that we will dig into further when we get into our more detailed consultations. We've chosen this proposal because we see this as a really practical and straightforward solution that can be implemented quickly. And again, the urgency is really key. So we want to see something happen soon. I can talk through, if you like, how a test like that might apply, if that's helpful.
Can you do it in about 30 seconds? We are running out of time, but I'd love to hear any kind of final thoughts you had on the topic and proposed reforms.
Yeah, so maybe I'll just say really quickly, just emphasise that human rights point. So considering things like what would a worker reasonably expect in the workplace, and is it actually necessary to use a tool like this to achieve a particular goal, or are there less intrusive alternatives, and have we considered safeguards to mitigate the impact? Those kinds of really important questions at the outset that could really create important protections for workers in practice.
Yeah, it sounds like a matter of just really turning your mind, you know, from a legislative perspective, turning our mind to it meaningfully and with the interests of workers in mind.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, well, we are out of time. I'm so sorry, Sarah. We've had you on the program a while ago now, and I think we might have had the same issue last time. Never enough time to talk about these terrifying and big, big, big issues, but we really appreciate you coming on the show. We'll make sure to put the report in the link of the bio. But thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you scaring us utterly and completely.
Well, thanks very much. I'm always willing to scare you anytime, so looking forward to coming back on at some point.
We look forward to next time. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Bye. Thanks.
You have been listening to Done by Law on 3CR 855 AM, streamed at 3cr.org.au and available on various podcast platforms. Done by Law will be back again next Tuesday at 6 PM as always. Stay tuned now for the wonderful voices of West Papua.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.